too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Teresa, this is Paul Holby. I'm the chair of the committee, and we'll get to you just real briefly as soon as we hear from the senator. So with that, I'm going to open the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. Colleagues, today we have a bill from the Senate side, Senate Bill 1571A. And Jan, could you give us a brief description of the bill?
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure allows a person that is contracting for restoration work to rescind the contract within 5 days after the formation of the contract, prohibits waiving the rescission right if the person that's providing the restoration work does not provide a good faith written estimate, and it voids the contract if the person providing the restoration work does not give written notice that describes those rescission rights, and it requires the person that's providing the work to provide a new or an amended contract if the actual costs exceed the estimated costs. There's no amendment before you today. There's came to you from the Senate on a vote of 30-0. Minimal revenue impact, and there's no fiscal impact.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And, Senator, welcome to our committee this afternoon. And we're not used to handling controversial bills, so I'm glad this came over unanimously. If you'd like to introduce yourself for the record and begin with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon State Senate. Senate Bill 1571 came to you from concerns that were expressed to me and my staff member, Amanda Hess, by Teresa Jahanger, who was on the phone. And as her house was burning down in my district on Martin Luther King Boulevard in Mason, she was approached by a restoration company that persuaded her that under duress she should go ahead and sign this contract as she's watching, you know, her life go up in flames. And it really ended up being not a very good deal for her. And so what we wanted to have available for consumers, some way to rescind that contract that might be signed under duress. So I will let Teresa tell her story, and my staff member Amanda Hess is here to talk about the mechanics of how we got to the bill that you have before us.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Teresa, if you would identify yourself by name before you begin and tell us your story and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Sure. My name is Teresa Hanger. I'm a constituent of House District 42, represented by Jules Bailey. Thanks so much for having me and listening to my story. I really appreciate it. Thank you to Senator Shields for bringing it to your attention. So as Senator Shields said, on August 8th of last year, I was a victim of arson, the 501 fire on MLK and Monroe Street, severely damaged my house. On the day of the fire, on August 8th, four men who worked for a restoration company and many, many others who worked from other restoration companies stood outside my house and watched the fire department put out the fire. When the fire department let me into the house, these men immediately came to my rescue, quote-unquote, and explained to me that I'd not be able to use any of my belongings unless I worked with a company like them to restore my items. They capitalized on my denial and the fact that I was a victim of this violent crime and told me that my insurance company would cover all of their services and not to worry about anything. I found out a few days later that their services were covered under my personal property insurance. They had originally said that it would be coming out of my personal liability, which is a lot more money. At that point, it put a halt to their services, after which time they had already charged me over $3,000 for everything that they did, which amounted to inventorying my house, which was completely useless, being that I had moved across the country and had movers inventory my stuff the week before, and also they cleaned some clothes. So my point being, they victimized the vulnerable by telling them blanket statements, having them sign blank check contracts without giving estimates for their service. I just want to make sure this doesn't happen to others who are victims of fire or other disaster. And I think this Senate bill would really help those people who are most in need after disaster. You can imagine that your denial is very high as you see your house burning down. You don't quite realize all that you've lost and the steps you need to take to protect yourself from these kinds of people or services. So thank you, representatives. I really appreciate you hearing the story.
Well, thank you for coming forward and bringing this issue to the attention of the legislature. I think it is something that we need to take a look at and see if there's some way we can rectify the scenario you described. Is there questions from the committee of Teresa? So, Teresa, we don't have any questions for you. We'll probably put you on mute. You're welcome to sit there and listen to us or not. But, again, thank you very much for your testimony.
Okay. Thank you so much. I have to go back to work, but I will look forward to the outcome.
That sounds like an important thing to do. So I'm sure Senator Shields will keep you apprised.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So, Amanda, if you'd like to identify yourself for the record.
Sure. For the record, my name is Amanda Hess, and I work for State Senator Chip Shields. The bill before you, we adopted the Dash 2 amendment. It focuses on a right to rescind. There's already a right to rescind in home sales contracts that's 3 days. However, that... So good acting restoration companies already give you a right to rescind. However, that right is waivable. So you can say, hey, you have this right, but if you want to get your stuff cleaned up right now because you really need it, please sign this, please waive your right away. So the Senate focused on the right to rescind based on the duress of the consumer or the person watching, the victim watching their belongings go up into flames or floods. After we heard from Teresa, I reached out to DOJ. There's about 18 complaints against restoration companies that we were able to identify. I also reached out to the fire chiefs and firefighters, and they relayed and will come up later that this is very much an issue across the state, and it's really started about 4 years ago, folks coming on scene and soliciting work. We had a work group on the Senate side that included restoration companies. It also included the League of Oregon Cities, and the fire chiefs, we went over the bill, and I'm happy to talk about the Dash 1 or the Dash 2 amendment if you would like, really came to consensus on the Senate side to go with the Dash 2 amendment.
Thank you, and I'm not certain that the committee has the Dash 1. I haven't looked on OLIS to see.
It is on OLIS.
It is on OLIS, okay. So would you like to talk to us about the Dash 1 just briefly as
sure.
well?
Sure, yeah, I'm more than happy to. So one of the first things I did was reach out to the CCB, and it became apparent that these bad acting restoration companies, we obviously know that there are restoration companies doing very good work, and after this issue became highlighted, a couple of restoration companies approached us to talk about what they currently do. Several of them are already licensed by the CCB, but some restoration companies focus just on cleaning services, and by focusing on cleaning services, so mold remediation, fire remediation from your property in your apartment, they don't fall under CCB licensure. So the Dash 1 amendment did a couple things. One, and I should say for the right to rescind the Dash 2, it's not all restoration work. It's restoration work defined for those man-made and natural disasters, so those emergency, non-routine events. And the Dash 1 amendment, it also includes that man-made natural disaster, non-routine events, but it would have those folks under CCB licensure. And then it would also prohibit solicitation within 1,000 feet of a disaster within 48 hours. And that comes from tow truck regulations. We pulled the idea from tow truck regulations. So when you are in an accident, a tow truck company can't solicit you within 1,000 feet of the car accident. And that's focusing on the solicitation. That's not, they can't be on site. So it includes the prohibiting solicitation of restoration work. It also includes the right to rescind in that dash one amendment. That's just the home sales 3-day right to rescind, but it makes it non-waivable. And then, lastly, it increased the fee or the violation that CCB could levy for egregious situations.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could. So essentially the dash one set up more of a regulatory scheme, and the dash two just focused on a non-waivable right to rescind. And where the Senate was is that we could come out of my committee with unanimous support on the non-waivable right to rescind, that the committee as a whole unanimously did not feel as comfortable with the dash one. So I, you know, for me, a deal's a deal, and that's what came out of the Senate. You know, what the House will do with this bill is, you know, your choice. I do understand that there now is some opposition arising, and they may be testifying later. But I think it somehow this is a very important bill that I think needs to go through now, and I'd be happy to work with the committee to get the House comfortable with a path to proceed.
Great. Sounds like we got a little bit of work to do in front of us, and appreciate you bringing the issue forward. I think it is a legitimate issue that needs to be considered. Mm-hmm. So any questions from the committee of Senator Shields or his staff? Representative Doherty.
Thank you very much. So is the problem the difference between people who are licensed and people who aren't licensed?
Mm-hmm.
Because you talk about these kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of ambulance, I guess, fire truck chasers. Are they licensed? Is there any sort of regulation for them in that area? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doherty, I think there's correlation between those who are not registering and the bad acting, but it's not directly related.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. It seemed to me that the constituent's biggest concern was she felt she was told something that perhaps didn't turn out to be true, i.e. regarding the ability of her insurance policy to cover the work that was done. Would this be any different than somebody who had an accident and goes in to get an estimate on repairing their damage to their vehicle but doesn't check to make sure that their coverage for said repairs and so forth? I mean, it seems to me we're somewhere along the line there should be some degree of personal, at least responsibility, to check and make sure that your policy would have this sort of coverage before you would authorize somebody to perform some sort of work for any damage repair.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think the sort of the difference being is that you have a person who's just watched all of their things burn to the ground. So their first, and I think I've talked to Teresa about this before, and she beats herself up about it mm-hmm. for not checking earlier. And I think that that it would be on our onus to make sure that, you know, it'd be great if someone on site was protecting, was, you know, telling her to check with her policyholder first. But what ends up happening is on the site of a fire, the firefighters are focusing on the fire, and they can order restoration companies to go off to not be in the way of the fire, but that ends up, they just end up being right there talking to the policyholder. So,
it seems I also heard in her complaint, though, that there may have been a dispute of the $3,000 that was charged for the services that were delivered as well. I mean, I was hearing that from her, that she evidently didn't feel like that was fair. I mean, she didn't come right out and say that, but...
Mr. Chair, I think that's correct.
And so with an unlicensed entity, I don't know that there's a remedy to solve that dispute.
That's a very good point. And that's the challenge, Mr. Chair, that's the challenge of the nature of this kind of work. It's not really an insurance issue. It's not really a construction issue. So what we felt like, if you sign a contract with a gun to your head, which, you know, I think is somewhat analogous, not completely, to the situation, that you should have a right to rescind it.
Mm-hmm.
Question?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Everybody, we all make mistakes sometimes, okay? And it was a mistake for her to enter into a contract when she was distraught, and we feel sorry for that. For the government to say, we will protect people from making a mistake by having a non-waivable 3-day right of rescission has consequences. I'm reading the bill, or the amendment right now, and so I have a situation where my kitchen has a fire, and I need a kitchen. And so I need the kitchen now. I don't want to wait 3 days for it, but I contact a contractor, and so he says, well, I can get in and do this immediately, but you could rescind the contract and for 3 days, and I don't get paid for the work that I do. And so the unintended consequence of this is that you can't get the work done because the government has interceded in an attempt to fix a very rare and extreme situation, and that's going to apply to everyone. And so how do we make sure that we're not making things worse by trying to protect one bad situation when sometimes bad things happen to good people, and the government can't protect people from their own their decisions to enter into agreements when they shouldn't. Now, I don't see a gun to her head. I see that she was distraught, and they said, you want us to do this right now? And she said, yes, that was a mistake. I bet she would never do that again. And we often learn from the School of Hard Knocks, and I mean, we ought to educate people about these kinds of things. But it is always a concern for me when we rush in and say, let's pass a law to deal with one circumstance that could have unintended consequences that deals with thousands of people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson. I'm glad you brought that up because it's not a completely hard right to rescind, and my assistant, Amanda, will talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, just to clarify the right to rescind, you can waive that right still in the Dash 2 amendment in the bill that we passed over if you provide a cost estimate. And we think that's just sort of
the balance.
The balance and generally good contracting behavior. If you're going to sign up for a service, you should have an idea of how much of that service is going to cost. And there's been talk about, you know, it's hard to estimate right away what it'll be. And so basically all it says you can, but on the other hand, if you just give a cost estimate that doesn't mean anything, then you could just put something and the consumer isn't protected at all. So our balance in that was saying provide a good faith cost estimate. If you go over that good faith cost estimate, enter into another contract for services. And there is probably areas for clarification in there about what happens to the first contract, but the idea is it's still waivable if you provide a good faith cost estimate of what the service will cost.
So I've got a question about that. If you entered into an agreement for somebody to fix your immediate life safety issues, and an agreement said, okay, well, we don't really know what the scope of the project is going to be until we get into it, which I think is probably kind of common sometimes. Would this rescission right apply to somebody who entered into an agreement for time and material to get started and start uncovering as they develop what the larger project would cost? Would that be also subject to the rescission right? An immediate time and material agreement?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, for direct answer, you should ask legislative counsel, but my understanding of the dash two is that it's a cost estimate or rate of service. Mm-hmm. So that sounds to me like that'd be a time and materials estimate.
Yeah,
And I should also clarify that in terms of immediate public safety need, there, you know, some of these restoration and the fire chiefs and can talk to this with cities. Cities or fire departments can contract with restoration companies or do already to do board up services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the immediate board up after a disaster. And so we made sure to clarify that the restoration work we're talking about is not that immediate board up service. It's sort of the blank check after that, for services that you may or may not need that might be exorbitantly priced.
Other questions? Well, thank you for your testimony today, and we'll continue to hear the rest of the testimony and regroup and see what we can do with this.
Appreciate your consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's over here. Stole it. Up next... Let's go. Let's bring up Nicole Palmatier and Bob Livingston. Somebody representing the fire and maybe the chasers. Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency Committee. If you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Go ahead.
For only once, I'll defer to the chiefs first.
We appreciate that. Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, Nicole Palmatier here today on behalf of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association and Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. We're here today in support of Senate Bill 1571. We appreciate Senator Shields bringing forth this issue. I know that Mr. Livingston will also have more on-site information to share about you. This is an issue that, once it was brought up to me by Senator Shields' staff and I had an opportunity to talk to the various members of OFCA, we've learned that this is an issue. We do have an issue with restoration companies that will show up on site. They're learning about fires from scanners or all kinds of nifty technology apps that they can hear on now, showing up and interfering sometimes with the ability of the fire service to be able to not only work with the situation at hand, but to protect the homeowner and protect the homeowner's property. And that's what our primary concern is, as well as making sure that we're protecting the firefighters who are going in on these sites too. What we don't necessarily need at that time is somebody who's interfering in that process, which is very important. We've seen this in a variety of areas, not just in the Portland metro area. We've talked to Clackamas, Portland, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, as well as farther south within the state. So it's an issue that isn't just living in one specific area. It is an issue around. We're glad that we're able to start this conversation. We think that this is an important one. We understand the necessity that was required in moving the bill as it is currently right now, that currently only deals with the right to rescind. Think that there are some other conversations about the protections of the fire site, and that's really important to us. We hope that conversation can continue. We hope this is a part of a broader conversation, but we do support this. We're happy to answer any questions that you may have and hope that you're able to take some action on this to help protect homeowners as well as to protect the firefighters who are also on site trying to take care of what can be probably one of the most traumatic incidences that can happen, watching your home and all your possessions burn down. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I also happen to be a firefighter with over 20 years of experience, and I want to make a couple of points to the committee. One, over the past 4 to 5 years, we have seen an increase in the amount and proliferation of fire restoration companies that are showing up on scenes. I was asked about this about 4 months ago, and certainly I did some checking with some of my fellow firefighters and this is not an issue that's unique to the Portland metropolitan area. I heard from firefighters from Eugene and Springfield and other parts of the state, certainly here locally. My testimony today doesn't represent the city of Salem. It represents myself and the Oregon State Firefighters Council, but as a firefighter here in Salem, I have seen some of these practices. And truly, some of these practices are predatory in nature. And what I can tell you in my 20 years of experience is these people are extremely vulnerable. I would liken it to, in these emotional states of mind, similar to somebody that's had an emergency call where their loved one is distraught, and some of the practices that go on, that these people are vulnerable. This is not a situation where they're thinking right. There's a lot of things that have just occurred to them. And I think the other point that I would like to make is that this isn't about structural integrity or anything like that. I just to give you an example, specifically what we're trying to curb here is those companies that, one, aren't licensed. And most reputable companies, as noted by Ms. Hess, are licensed. But the problem that we noted in the Senate committee, I think it's an important point that the CCB said, is that many of this fire restoration doesn't fall under necessarily building codes. We're not talking about electrical issues. We're not talking about structural integrity. We're talking about water damage, smoke damage, some of those cleanup activities. And one of the things that I think shouldn't get lost in this conversation is to debate it is, as an example, if for some reason we have to cut the electricity and we get the local utility company in place, there's already codes and requirements that then basically make that place to where it's non-inhabitable. If there's structural integrity problems and those kind of issues that are involved, we, before we would even turn it over, we would make sure that there's a code and a permit process and some inspections that were involved. So I think while there probably needs to be a broader discussion specific in what we're trying to tackle in this particular bill, is those companies that provide those fire restoration services to the vulnerable when they have significant smoke and water damage. We're not talking about, a licensed plumber or an electrician that's going to come in and provide work. And the final point that I would make is, again, there are some really good fire restoration companies, and I don't know if they're here today, but in the committee and the work group that was involved, they were for this because they want to provide a service that is necessary and needed, but they also don't want to be undermined and have a reputation by some of these, if you will, fly-by-night people that are out there that, anybody can use a phone right now, and if you have the right program, you can dial in right here in Salem any call that's going on. You can do the same thing in the Portland metropolitan area and know when there's a fire incident. So the issue at hand is that you've got people in an extreme vulnerable state of mind. I wished I could explain it better other than I can tell you over 20 years of experience. It's heart-wrenching when you have to tell somebody they've either, worst case, when they've lost a loved one or when they've lost a majority of their valuables, and particularly, pictures of their kids and those kind of things, that, the bottom line is you're not thinking right in those. It's not like a car accident. It's more significant. It's an invasion of a person's home. And so that's the intent of this bill. Be happy to answer any questions. I hope you give it some thoughts. There may be some more work that needs to be done, but I do think it's an issue that needs to be addressed, and the sooner it's addressed, the better. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. You mentioned real briefly about protecting the fire site or the site. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? What that issue is you're referring to? I don't know that it's covered in this bill.
Right. Chair Holvey, I think that had more to do with the Dash 1 amendments, which was talking about the perimeter of 1,000 feet within 48 hours of the fire site. What had been shared with me by some various fire chiefs and firefighters was that there are occasions where you have some of these fly-by-night restoration companies that are hearing it coming on site and really aggressively trying to find the homeowner, find the person, find who can I talk to, and they're interfering with the work of whoever the incident commander is. At that point in time, when a house is on fire, they do not have time to be dealing with this individual who is trying to get some business. Mm-hmm. They need to not be interfering with that. By having a safe perimeter around it, that gives the opportunity for the incident commander and the firefighters who are on site to deal with that without having to worry about, in some instances, we've had to have that person escorted off the site. We've had to deal with safety issues. You know, we've had to work with whoever the law enforcement is that's on site in order to ask that person to please get away from the situation at hand. And that's just not something that somebody in Mr. Livingston's position we feel needs to be dealing with at that present moment. Right now, the critical issue is to contain the fire, to make sure that everybody involved in it is as safe as possible. So that's what I was referring to, and that was a piece of the -1 amendments. But as the bill is right now, it just currently deals with the right to rescind.
And if I could add to that, Mr. Chair, to be clear, the fire service does, the incident commander does have the authority once we arrive on scene and take command of that. We can monitor people and keep them at a safe distance. I think the issue at hand, and Chief Knorr from the Portland Fire Bureau testified to this, in we typically know who the good and bad players are. The problem is that when you have an incident, an emergency scene, we simply don't have enough resources to simply have somebody, if you will, stay with the victim of a fire and make sure that they're protected at a vulnerable time. And so one of the problems that we have is, while we have the authority to keep these people literally out of the emergency incident scene, because we're limited on resources, we keep all civilians out of that danger zone. And that's the problem, is what happened is they kind of lurk around and they find out, and they're very good at finding out who the vulnerable people are, who are the ones affected by a fire. And so I think that if that helps to clarify that answer of what you're asking.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Because that was my next question. Didn't you already have that authority? But Representative Doherty.
Well, and this is a question. I don't think you guys can answer it. Maybe Jan can or Ms. Hess. Is that you're testifying simply to somebody has fire damage. But this bill also talks about other man-made and natural disasters. So this be like trees and earthquakes and floods and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's not a question for you, because I realize that you're just dealing with fire.
And just, Madam Chair, Representative Doherty, for that, again, in those, you know, house into a tree with all the winds, that's common.
Yes.
Obviously, we're going to show up. Some of those same applications would apply. There would be similar damages. There's going to be water damage on a day like that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the bill was, you're correct in that it applies to those. But we are involved in those things as well.
Being first responders, you're first responding to many issues, not just fire.
Any other questions? Not seeing any. Thank you so much for your testimony, and appreciate the perspective of our firefighters. Let's see. Up next. I feel like I have to divide this, or let's have Scott Berry and Mike Eliason, and on deck Ryan Tribbett and then Kate Newell.
We need a first responder.
Slower than normal in session.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
But more thoughtful.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Mike Eliason, representing Associated General Contractors. And I'll be fairly brief, but we do have some concerns with the amended version of the bill that passed out. And I do remember that incident, actually, that was being described. I live pretty close to MLK and Monroe Streets, and I did see that. That fire as it took place that morning. But I will say, I feel like the original bill, as it came out in the Senate committee, probably actually did a better job of at least trying to address the issue. You know, I think the way it was drafted probably was unworkable in terms of trying to get companies to interpret the mental state of the person who had suffered the fire or other event, and arguably was drafted really broadly in terms of other man-made events and crime, and really goes sort of beyond where some of the issues we've heard about today with respect to fire. The amended version, though, unfortunately, I know there were two versions, and one was particularly complex and maybe too complex for the February session, and so the dash two was adopted. But I'm not sure it actually gets at the issue being addressed or the issue that's trying to be addressed in terms of the right to rescind for 5 days. As was described, there are already two different right to rescind statutes that exist today, a one-day that's in Chapter 701 and a three-day that's in Chapter 83, I believe. So adding a five-day right to rescind presents issues in terms of you either have work that is being done with the right to rescind still in place, or you have a case where the work doesn't begin for 5 days, which is problematic, obviously, in the case of an emergency event where you just need work done immediately. There are also some confusing issues in terms of while it is waivable if you provide a cost estimate, there's a separate section that says essentially the contract is void if a notice isn't provided at the same time. So not voidable, but actually void. So we just think that there are a number of issues with this bill, and we have no objection whatsoever to trying to address a specific situation if it can be done correctly. But we don't think that where the bill is right now gets us there at all. So with that, I'll close.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Scott Berry here today on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders Association, and I apologize for getting into this issue a little bit late. We didn't have any issues, I think, with the original concept, and so until we saw the dash twos, weren't nearly as concerned. My understanding was that the companies involved in this were unlicensed, at least by the contractors board, so no bonding, no insurance, in our mind, a lack of consumer protection that's built into a CCB license. So I think if this concept were to move forward, we'd certainly like those licensed contractors, including, you know, plumbers, electricians, all those folks that you would call, let's say, if you had a flood, to be exempt from that. And those folks have that consumer protection built in, including, in many cases, the right to rescind the contract, et cetera. All that's been developed over many, many years of time and effort spent in this building. So I think that's our real concern with the bill today, as it sort of draws in licensed construction contractors. And as for the solicitation language, I don't think that we would have any issues with that whatsoever.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Sim Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berry, the bill kind of uses the term good faith estimate or written estimate and a contract kind of interchangeably at times, and I'm a little confused by that. I wonder if you might, just from the industry perspective, talk about the differences in a cost estimate and a contract as it relates to work to be provided by a contractor.
Chair Holby, Representative Johnson, I know that within the terms of a contract for a construction contractor, those definitions are set out, and I don't want to get into the specifics today because I don't know that I could quote them properly, but those definitions are certainly set out, and to the extent this bill affects those, and I don't think it would if CCB licensees were carved out.
Mm-hmm.
That's our intent.
Okay. Other questions?
I can understand your issue, or I guess your contention that maybe construction contractor licensees should be carved out of this because of the consumer protections offered through that licensing and bonding regime. Was there a discussion about requiring the restoration contractors to have a construction contractor's license as well?
Chair Holby,
what was your position on that?
I've not had discussions like that. I'm not sure, depending on how it was designed. I don't think we would want a new license with new qualifications. Mm-hmm. To the extent that they would be required to have some sort of bonding consumer protection, I don't know enough about their separate issues to say that's absolutely the way to go, but certainly within that license, there are protections that are already there and built in.
And Chair Holby, I think that what Mr. Berry said to a large degree holds true. I think if we were talking about trying to create new licensing requirements, and I know that there was, and this is something that I think Ms. Hess brought up, you know, there's some types in terms of cleaning services that don't get into strictly the construction aspect of it that don't require a license, and trying to get into developing a new license type of going that route would be a fairly long, complicated process that I don't know that we could get to in the next week or two. So, you know, we're happy to have that conversation, but I think it was also talked about, it wasn't necessarily, you know, we're talking about trying to figure out if we're talking about direct solicitation, companies that do direct solicitation versus not, or licensed versus not. All of these issues are legitimate, but I don't know that we've completely pinpointed what is the real issue.
Thank you.
One follow-up.
Thank you. Were either of you two involved in the public hearing or work session on the Senate side?
Chair Holvey, Representative Johnson, we were not. And okay. In fact, I had asked the question, were there any contractors involved? I guess there were a couple of restoration contractors that were involved in the initial discussions. I don't know whether they were licensed CCB restoration contractors or not.
Thank you.
And Chair Holvey, no, we were not, actually. we were indeed... not in the room for that particular Monday morning hearing last Monday.
So it wasn't until you saw the bill had passed that you developed the opposition to the bill?
And Chair Holvey, we did not see the amendment until it had already been adopted, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading this, and, you know, having been a lawyer, the words are what count, not the intent. And so what I see is that this applies to repair to commercial property. It doesn't say real property. And so I don't see anywhere that this distinguishes real property versus other property that could be residential or commercial. And so if there was going to be something done, I think that if we don't want this to be extended to trucks or other things, that as an attorney, I would say,
yeah,
Your Honor, it says commercial property, and this truck was a commercial property, and this was a sudden event that took place. And so, I mean, I just think we need to be careful about what the words say.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for your testimony today and sharing your thoughts with us. Appreciate it. Up next, I have Ryan Tribbett and Kate Newell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ryan Tribbett, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association and the Wall and Ceiling Contractors Association. I want to start out first acknowledging the issue. Clearly, the woman involved here does not feel good about the incident that happened. But in listening to her testimony, I am trying to figure out for myself what particular issue broke down, because when you identify that, I think it helps figure out where the best solution might be. Is the issue that she was solicited there at the scene of the incident, the crime in this case, was it something that was wrong in the terms of the contract, or was it the fact that she didn't have a sort of recourse available that would be if it was a sort of licensed contractor who had a bond posted and whatnot? I really don't know the answer to that question. I know that clearly this bill is put squarely on there was something wrong, mm-hmm, in the terms of the contract itself, but it sounded during the testimony that it had a lot to do with sort of her state of mind being very distraught at the time. So if looking at the bill functionally, it does, we did not participate on the Senate side. We thought it was pretty narrowly tailored at groups that were not licensed contractors. We got wind of this after it had sailed out of the Senate, and part of what, so if we look at the functionality of it, I asked my contractors, what happens when you get called in an emergency situation where they need to come out? And said, typically it's in the middle of the night, something's happened, a pipe's broken, a tree, you know, broke a hole in a roof or something, water's pouring in and damaging personal property. What we do is we send a worker out to fix the problem. Most of our operations are small businesses that have 3, 5, 7 employees. We might have one cost estimator, a third-party attorney who negotiates the parameters of complex contracts and things. We don't send or have a written estimate in many of these cases. We send a guy out there to plug up the hole so the water stops pouring in and damaging the rest of their personal property. So this, you know, that worker, maybe I'll look up and say, oh, there's a broken panel there. I can get a new panel for X amount, and it will cost me take me 3 hours to replace that or something like that. That's a ballpark figure that is good for the consumer to know and help them make a decision whether they want to go forward with it. But when you're asking for something to be put in writing, a good faith estimate, into a contract and all that, that isn't how the real world works. That's not how any of these instances. We're doing this work on a handshake, and we're legitimate businesses licensed by the CCB. We have a bond that if there's a grievance, they can file a claim against the bond. There's a recourse there. So that is incredibly problematic. The right to rescind on the second portion, if there is a cost overrun, and because the bill is not specific to just fire incidents, but if, you know, say there was an issue you were responding to and one of these marble panels on the side of the building was cracked, and so we give you an estimate that says this is what it's going to cost to replace that panel. We pull that panel off, we find structural damage to the foundation or to some other structural element. So we have to write a new contract in that. Now, when they have that new right to rescission in there, I don't think it's clear in here whether that right of rescission applies just to the new contract. Does that flow all the way back through to the original contract? I don't think it's clear in there, and it is probably the most problematic thing functionally about this. We don't want to just seem completely obstructionist here. So I really think it's a matter of determining what is that lever, what constituted the actual problem for her. I think it's one of those things. Is it where she was approached and how she was approached? Was it the terms of the contract itself, or was it the fact that she had no recourse after the fact? You could very easily put a thing that just says you can't solicit business there, and there's a penalty there if we catch you soliciting business there. There wouldn't have fiscal on that sort of thing. You could exempt out licensed CCB holder because there is already the consumer protection built in that Mr. Berry talked about. I think there's other ways that this can be, or you can just require these groups to become licensed themselves so that there is that built-in consumer protection. I think there's any number of ways that this can be done. I think this is probably the most complicated way, and to Mr. Richardson's point, I think this will create more problems than it fixes. And we're opposed. Didn't think I said that.
I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah.
Kate, would you like
Chair
to go
Holby,
ahead?
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall, and I'm here today representing the Plumbing Mechanical Contractors Association and the Sheet Metal Contractors Association, who together are about 250 contractors here in Oregon. So we certainly understand and appreciate the intent of this concept, and the practices that were described in the previous testimony were undoubtedly atrocious and definitely predatory practices, and we recognize that. And as construction contractors in Oregon, we would never engage in such an unprofessional and predatory practice. We definitely support the intent of this concept. However, like you've heard, we share some of the exact same concerns that have been raised and are afraid that the far-reaching nature of this bill might actually have very, very negative impacts for not just the construction industry, but the consumers. And so for my folks, I use the example, because we're plumbers and we just had our giant snowstorm, of a natural disaster that might be your pipes freezing and bursting in the basement. And again, to Ryan's point, I don't know that you send somebody out with an estimator to do a good faith estimate. You're just going in to fix the problem and stop it. I would hate to create a situation where you conceivably could have a contractor going out, they get the contract, and they say, okay, your pipes are flooding, we'll see you in 5 days to start work. So I think that does have some potentially negative impacts to the consumers as well. So I think it's also worth pointing out, and I think it's been mentioned before, but there already is for residential construction a right to rescind that exists in ORS 701.310. And what that provision allows is you to rescind the contract up to midnight of the following business day. So I think that that is already a protection that exists in there. Kind of moving on, we also have some technical concerns that I think have been raised, so I won't go into them, in just the way that the bill is drafted. I think we share that sort of concern that Representative Johnson raised about the good faith effort versus good faith estimate versus the contract, and some discrepancies between there. We also have a concern about we're not really sure where this bill as currently drafted would be placed in statute and who would be enforcing it. It's not entirely clear on that front, and we definitely share the concern of the on the change orders and the second right to rescind. Does that go back to the original contract or just to the change order contract? I will say we also were not involved in the work group that worked over on the Senate side. Unfortunately, we also were not as concerned with the original bill and the way that it was drafted, and were not aware of the amendments until it was passed out of committee. So I apologize to the sponsors and the committee and the Senate. It was not something that we were involved with and working on. But going forward, we would be more than happy to work with the sponsors and the advocates and everybody on figuring out a way that we can laser focus this into what I think everybody agrees is actually a problem that is happening out there, and we don't want to stop that. With that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Johnson.
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, neither of you were also involved in the hearing process on the Senate side. Is that correct? Thank you.
So one clarification. You mentioned that there's already a right to rescission in ORS 701, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that applies only to licensed contractors under that chapter, not to these restoration contractors that I guess we're talking about.
Chair Hovey, I believe that is, yes, the case, because it is in Chapter 701, which is the Construction Contractor Board chapter.
Right. So actually, that right to rescission doesn't apply to the subject of this bill at this point anyway. Okay. Any other questions? I appreciate you raising these concerns, and hopefully we can have a conversation and try to figure out what a pathway might be to try to accomplish the goal of this, because I think it is an issue that needs to be addressed, and could definitely use your insights and how we address it. So thank you very much for going forward. Is there anybody else out there that wanted to comment on this particular bill, Senate Bill 1571A? Not seeing anybody else. Committee, that was the last testifier on the bill. Appreciate your attention and listening. I think it is something that we should think about. So with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1571A and adjourn for today, the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. Protection and Government.